listening to the B-Fox and B-Frank show. We have a Final Four. It is UConn, Alabama, NC State, and Purdue. Two teams we might have expected based on seeds. Two teams that are definitely surprised. Kind of staying consistent with what the tournament has really become. Looked a little bit in doubt through the first two rounds, only one double-digit seed reaching the Sweet 16, but NC State has just kept rolling. Let's go region by region here, talk about how we got here. We start in the East, which is, of course, UConn. It is hard to put into words this incredible run that UConn has been on over the last two tournaments. Utter domination. They have led by 30 or more points in each of their four wins so far in this tournament, which is remarkable. They are the ultimate flip the switch team. They really have not put together a full good offensive game yet, which is remarkable because, again, they are just bludgeoning teams. And that was certainly true against Illinois. Didn't shoot the ball well from the outside. It was a rocky first half, but end of the first half, start of the second, 30 consecutive points for UConn. Just a reminder, it's like, yeah, they are really fucking good. Just really, really impressive performance in a game that we thought might have been one of the most competitive or at least entertaining of the tournament.
Yeah, I tried to warn a lot of people. A lot of Illinois fans that I know, specifically my family, my sister who went to Illinois, that like Illinois might hang around for a bit, but this UConn team is different. They are so much better than everyone else that it is actually jarring. And, you know, sitting at halftime in a 5-point game, I think a lot of people felt pretty good if you're Illinois. Illinois didn't necessarily play great, but it was clear that they were still in the game very much. And like you said, it was kind of a late run that put UConn in front there, gave them that 5-point advantage. And I'm sitting there saying, okay, feel good all you want. I could have never predicted a 30-0 run, but UConn had made maybe 1-3 in the first half. They looked pretty bad outside of clinging offensively. And then next thing you know, the floodgates open and Illinois, for whatever reason, and clearly it was a game plan put together by Underwood, as he said in the early, I don't know if it was under 16 or under 12 timeout, that they're just going to keep attacking Klingon. And it's like, okay, how many times do you want this guy to block your shot before you're going to do anything different? I mean, Illinois passing up wide open 3-point opportunities, wide open mid-range jump shots to go right into the 7-footer and get blocked. It was astounding that nothing changed until it was far too late.
Yeah, they got the one early foul on Klingon and then thought, you know, we're just going to attack him despite all evidence to the contrary. It keeps stacking up that we're not going to be able to score over this guy. Just all-time stubbornness from Underwood. Like, this is a guy who has had some great coaching performances in the tournament. Certainly remember it, Stephen F. Austin doing a great job as a less talented team, scheming in ways to upset better ones. Not necessarily the situation here today, because Illinois does have talented players. Terrence Shannon completely locked up in this one by Castle. Excellent defensive performance. Damask was really the offense, ironically playing a lot of booty ball, something that Illinois has professed to hate in recent years. But he said, if he blocks us 100 times, he blocks us 100 times, which is dumb because, you know, then you're very much not scoring. They got up to 19 times. They were 0 for 19 going at Klingon at the rim. And at no point were they like, hey, maybe let's try something else. Because, you know, the comparison to Zach Edey is easy to make in that they are both large individuals. Klingon is a much better defender. He's not going to normally be the offensive player that Edey is, although this was his game at both ends of the floor. He was excellent offensively as well, very efficient, and he can wall up and you're not going to score over him. Or if you're going up, you're not protecting the ball, he's going to swat that. And that just kept happening time and time again. And Illinois was content to just slam their head against the wall and hope something different happens, which it did not. And then once UConn got rolling, it was just, it's nothing else you can do.
Yeah. And even Castle was in foul trouble for a decent portion of this game, and Illinois just refusing to find their best players. I don't necessarily understand the move as well to go away from Dane Danger. I understand that like Hawkins allows you to spread the floor more, but at the same time, he was so ineffective defensively. It was free layups for Donovan Clingan whenever Coleman Hawkins was on him. And then offensively, he was giving you nothing. I mean, he really did not do anything of note. So I just, a lot of head scratching decisions from Underwood throughout this game. And like, if Danny Hurley wants to be mad about a game, he has every right to be mad about the first half that his team played. They were not good. They missed a lot of open opportunities offensively. They turned the ball over defensively. They were just getting bullied. Like, all it was, back him down, get a layup. Back him down, get a layup. And that's how Illinois built a small cushion to allow themselves to stay in this game. But then things switched. They were able to flip a switch and, this is the problem that I think a lot of folks didn't understand is like, okay, you get Clingan out of the game, then you get Samson Johnson in, who is close to 7 feet tall, even more athletic than Donovan Clingan, and can defend essentially 2 through 5. So it's like there is no rest, even if this team isn't crazy deep. But yeah, it was just very head-scratching, some of the decisions that were made.
Yeah, Coleman Hawkins can't defend anyone remaining in the tournament one-on-one in the post. It was just like anytime Clingan kind of came down the floor, it's just Coleman Hawkins, seriously. You could see just UConn just foaming at the mouth trying to get him the ball. Like, you're All-American in this game, Tristan Newton, gave you pretty much nothing. And yeah, they went in a blowout. So that just speaks to what UConn can do to teams. And yeah, like Dane Danger largely got you here. He was the revelation over the second half of the season, giving some defensive support, certainly also offensive support, in addition to Shannon and Damask, who had been carrying the load. But he's not going to really get anything going on Clingan. I think he would have done a better job slowing him down defensively, though. But yeah, it's we still have not seen UConn's best. That's really my takeaway here. And you know, if we can, then it's going to be even scarier. But I mean, they're defending at such a high level already. It's making up for some bad shooting nights that they're having, and they still are playing Andrew Hurley every game.
Yeah,
which is just remarkable.
Yeah, the stat that stands out the most to me is that the bench, Harmon and Hansberry, outscored Tristan Newton and Steph Castle combined in this game. I mean, Hansberry on his own outscored those two with 8 points to 7 in this game. And then you look at Caravan, he only had 10. Like, if you're reading this box score as an Illinois fan, you see that, you're thinking, we're winning this game. And if not, it's going to be a close one, not a 25-point beatdown.
Yeah, you would think, but so it turns out Hansberry was really the only guy other than Damask who could hit a jumper. Yep. So that ultimately was it. Because, I mean, both teams coming into this game were having some of the best offensive seasons of the KenPom era. And you would not know that watching this game at all.
No, not even close.
So UConn's reward for getting out unscathed is going to be Alabama, the 4 seed, who took down North Carolina. Outstanding game from Grant Nelson. And then they just bombed threes as they do, but a lot went in against Clemson. And that's what they're going to have to do to have any chance against UConn. Clemson, of course, upsetting Arizona, who had yet another disappointing earlier than, I guess, expected exits, certainly as their seed would indicate. I don't know how many years in a row they've lost to a seed 4 slots or worse than them, but I did see that going around, going going back to the Sean Miller days, DeAndre Ayton, no showing against Buffalo, et cetera, et cetera. But that's kind of the Arizona brand now, and one that Tommy Lloyd is going to have to wrestle with, because he has had his team in position first 3 years, just one seed, two seed, two seed, and you've got two Sweet 16s and one first round exit to a 15 seed. So it's raising a lot more questions, and just the number of bad shots Arizona took. I turned it on after a slow start. Clemson was already up, and the first thing I see is Caleb Love taking a one-legged runner that I think was inside. It's like, oh my God, we're already resorting to this. Just no cohesion on offense. They had kind of the rough shooting game, and then Clemson was just back cutting them to death. It was, you know, Princeton doesn't run the Princeton offense anymore, but it was a little poetic in that those were the two teams you lost to in back-to-back years. But yeah, this was the, I think, region with the most entertaining two Sweet 16 games, for sure.
I don't remember the exact stat, but it was something like Caleb Love and RJ Davis are the first players ever to go 0 for 9 from 3 in the same like day of the Sweet 16 or something. And it was poetic, I would say. It just fits perfectly with everything that was going on. We were expecting the Caleb Love Bowl. Instead, we got the College Football Playoff in the Elite Eight between Clemson and Alabama. And I mean, again, Brad Brunell, no one better with his back against the wall. He delivers an Elite Eight appearance and really was just a few minutes away from getting this Clemson team to a Final Four, which is outrageous to think about. But there are so many more questions than answers on the Arizona front. Like, you, Balo is a great big, maybe the best they've had in a bit. Pell Larson plays a solid role, doesn't shoot a million times like Kirk Reza did, which was part of the addition via subtraction this offseason. You kind of pick that up with Caleb Love, but he does so many other things that it helps make up for it. You've got Bradley, you've got Lewis, you've got Boswell, and just so many guys no-showed in the game that they desperately needed.
Yeah, I mean, the Carcaries are running this team. They might lose in the first round, but they did get better trading him for Caleb Love, adding Keyshawn Johnson. And it's still a disappointing end, but a Sweet 16 is better than losing in the first round to a 15 seed. That's just a fact. I'm sorry, but
yeah.
It was a tough way to go. And again, credit to Clemson for bouncing back from a blowout loss to Boston College and kind of going on this run to the Elite Eight that really no one saw coming. New Mexico is the favorite, is the 11th seed in the first round game. On the other side of this, Alabama, it was Grant Nelson's time to shine against North Carolina. He took over and made sure there would be no RJ Davis, Caleb Love game. I guess that was the late game, so that point doesn't stand. But anyway, and then it was Stevenson and Pringle, just two guys who are nowhere near the top of anyone's scouting report for Alabama, really taking over and pushing them through against Clemson. But this is... the Clemson game was Nate Oates' vision of what this team should be. It's just hit 16 threes. Three is more than two. That's going to win you a lot of games. It's just when it's off, that's when they get tough to watch. But when they're hitting shots, they look awesome. And really, they were the only team to advance and still playing in the Final Four that has hit their threes, because we've seen some rough shooting performances from the rest of them. Can they defend? Still not really. But
I doubt it.
But if you're hitting your shots, it's you just got to win one game, and they've been able to do that. They've taken care of business at every stretch. It has mostly been outscoring the opponents. Grand Canyon game little bit of an outlier, but it certainly held true. They have a deep rotation, obviously, as Clemson game showed you, of guys who can step up and lead the way, and they've still got Mark Sears, who we haven't talked about yet, Rylan Griffin, and just all kinds of talent that you have to account for. But UConn is a completely different animal than anyone else in the field. So
yeah,
that's the tough part.
It was tough because PJ Hall has been great all year for Clemson. He played pretty poorly in this game. I mean, as poorly as a guy with 14 points and 4 rebounds can play. He did foul out. You can say what you want about some of the foul calls. I think at the end of the day, water kind of found its level there. But like you said, Pringle, Stevenson were huge. Mark Sears had a monster second half. He was pretty unknown, pretty quiet in the first half of this game. Really struggled to find his shot. I don't think he hit a three until the second half, and then he hit 7 of them. They still had a 3-point lead. When you go into the half, Sears is kind of contained, and Alabama still has a lead. As Nate Oates, you've got to feel pretty good about that. Probably the only game that Alabama has truly had an interior advantage, and really it was only intermittent, I guess is the better way to put it, with PJ Hall going to the bench due to foul trouble. But like you said, they're able to run and gun up and down the floor, hit threes like they did. It makes them a dangerous team. It was more so like a backbreaker for Clemson. Every time they come down, find a big bucket or even a three, it's 6 seconds later, Alabama's already hit one of their own. And, you know, you're back to work offensively to try and figure out how to cut into this lead.
Yeah, I mean, that's the vision. It's you want your opponent to trade twos for threes. So it's working out for Alabama. They've got a tall task ahead. As we move over to the other side, Jamal Shedd going out with an injury. Big story in that Sweet 16 game. Houston coming up just short against Duke. Marquette missed everything against NC State. 4 for 31. From three, a lot of them were wide open. NC State defended decently, but a lot of it came down to Marquette missing open shots, which they are not accustomed to doing. And then NC State beating Duke in the regional final for the second time in the span of a few weeks after they did in the ACC tournament. We've got an 11 seed in the Final Four. But I think, you know, you can be very happy for NC State, which I am, but there's also some pretty big what ifs in this region.
Oh, big time. I mean, Houston wins that game if Jamal Shedd doesn't get hurt, plain and simple. Duke scored 54 points. Houston's offense completely sputtered without their best player. I don't know that anyone can really argue that Jamal Shedd doesn't change that game by 3 or 4 points. I mean, at worst, you're looking at overtime. If Jamal Shedd just performs anywhere that finds his team 3 points, I think he can do much more than that. So Duke, very much fortunate, I think, to get to the Elite Eight in general. Marquette, my God, they didn't necessarily play poorly. Like you said, they just could not hit a single thing. And even when the shots weren't falling, just refusing to change up their game plan, fairly similar to Brad Underwood in Illinois. Just, you know, this is what we're going to do, and if it doesn't work, we're okay with losing that way. And I am fairly surprised that Shaka made that decision, given the fact that they have a number of great athletes out there that can create their own shot, get open, and attack the rim, like Okolik, Cam Jones, Oso Iguodaro, those kind of guys. So really surprised just to see Marquette's disinterest in doing anything other than launching threes when they clearly did not have it. And what a different game that would have been, Marquette-Houston instead of this Duke-NC State game, guaranteeing the ACC a team in the Final Four, which would have been hilarious if they get all those teams into the Sweet 16 and can't get a single one into the Final Four. But here we are. The DJs were sensational against Duke. credit to Flip. He's comeback player of the year after that insane injury he suffered at Wake, but just not enough. And then the clear out foul at the end was just so dumb on his part. He was clearly frustrated, but it almost seemed like he didn't want to be there anymore. And tossing aside, I don't know if it was Middlebrooks or McConnell, whoever it was, just an outrageous play to end his potentially end his Duke career.
One of the whites. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, it would have been better for his legacy. If this is indeed his last game, to just continue milking the fake injury, because he just got worked one-on-one in the block time and time and time again by DJ Burns. Didn't matter. They did try to rotate a couple guys onto him. Ryan Young at least did a little bit better job of walling up and forcing Burns to shoot from further away, but he kept hitting that hook shot or floater. No problem. Mitchell, no luck either. This was his best scoring game of the tournament. I think he finished with 29. And he has proven in games past that he is equally adept as a passer if the double team is ever going to come. Mm-hmm. It was great to see, Jokic was late to his press conference after the Nuggets game because he was watching DJ Burns and loving what he was seeing. The nation has become enamored with DJ Burns, rightfully so. DJ Horn has been a leading scorer for most of the year, so for him to kind of be leading the charge as well is great. It was pretty much those two guys. Anything they can get from the rest of the bunch is gravy at this point, but it's a team of transfers that has gelled at the right time and just gone on an all-time incredible run that obviously is going to hearken comparisons to 1983, and they're two games away.
Yeah, yeah. And lost in the shuffle, Jared McCain was great for Duke, literally half their points. Nobody else showed. Jeremy Roach was incredibly disappointing, I think, in this game. Flip obviously struggled both ends of the floor. Mitchell struggled. Tyrese Proctor put up a goose egg, which is just remarkable in 30 minutes for someone as skilled as he is to not score. And then the bench provided absolutely nothing. So not that they are the deepest team by any stretch of the imagination. I think we knew that was a weakness of Duke's for quite a bit this year. But just to see them go 2 points off the bench is tough.
Then finally, in the Midwest, Purdue advances. Kind of in retrospect, it makes sense because in the Midwest region, they got to play two teams they had already beaten. They beat those two teams again, Gonzaga, Tennessee. Dalton Knecht, amazing. His star burned bright. It has unfortunately been put out. It was both those guys, Edie and Connect, in the regional final, scoring over half their team's points. This is the risk with Tennessee. We saw it against Texas. It happens. It happened against Mississippi State. Started to happen more later in the season. They did such a good job avoiding it for such a long time, but just no offense outside of Dalton Connect. Could not hit a shot. Adu was very clearly in his head from the start. Couldn't get anything going. Could not get anyone else to hit a shot from the perimeter. Ziegler gave you nothing. Vescovi was still coming off the bench after he'd been injured. But, yeah, it was frustrating if you're a Tennessee fan. I think the season is still a success. You win the SEC. You make it all the way to the Elite Eight. But just going through that game, you're at such a – foul disparity is you kind of expected. They play very physically, and also just you're playing Purdue. That's going to happen. That's what happens every game. But you're in a position where you can still win the game if anyone else helps. But ultimately, it was Dalton Connect on an island, and it wasn't enough.
Yeah, I think the biggest disappointment is just what we knew about this team before. Like that they're biggest Achilles heel is that they struggle offensively, and they can go 4, 5, 6 minute stretches without scoring. And we saw two big stretches of that. I think it was close to 5 or 6 minutes in the first and second half, and that's where Purdue did most of their damage. Now, if you think about it, 25% of the game, essentially, Tennessee did not score a point on these bad droughts, and still they had a chance down the stretch in this game to close it out and win a ball game. But like you said, Zakai Ziegler really struggled, did not provide much. He was bad from the free throw line, plain and simple, 2 of 5. And I think one or two of those was front end 1 and 1 misses. I don't know why James didn't get more shots. I truly do not understand why we're not letting Josiah Jordan James shoot the ball more. He was 3 of 4. He hit 2 threes. He looked comfortable with the ball, and he looked comfortable attacking Edie. I'm not totally sure why anyone else is really shooting the ball besides him or Connect, especially when Ziegler is struggling as much as he is. But that's the way it is. And, you know, Purdue's guards struggled a bit in this game, but it doesn't matter when you have Zach Edey going for 40 and 16 and getting to the line 22 times. I don't know that many teams can overcome that.
Yeah, and like, for a football analogy, like, they got out to a lead midway late in the first half. Connect was hot from three. If you can just avoid those debilitating droughts and just more or less match what Purdue is throwing at you, you're good. You got out to that early lead. So often it seems like Purdue is playing from ahead the whole time. Teams can't quite get over the hump because they're also, you know, flailing, getting in foul trouble, and it's too much of a mountain to climb. I guess no pun intended with Edie, but Tennessee was in good position. They just couldn't do anything offensively, and that was ultimately to their detriment. But yeah, they had no answer for Edie. And looking ahead to the Final Four, that's going to be the first game, Purdue, NC State. I don't think NC State is going to have an answer for Edie either. DJ Burns, not a great defender. And there's also the risk of him getting in early foul trouble and taking away a big part of NC State's offense. So as much as I would love Purdue to keep the streak alive, losing double-digit seeds, which now is incredibly back on the table, I think Purdue is going to win this and advance to the national championship game. How do you see that one shaking out?
Yeah. I think I have to take Purdue. The matchup inside is a huge, huge, huge advantage for Purdue, as it normally is against most teams. I am intrigued to see how North Carolina State's guards attack Purdue's, if it is going to be an all or nothing, let the guards beat you game plan, or is it going to be, we're fine with Edie scoring 40 if it means that they have to dump the ball inside, he has to bang around and then find ways to get either to the free throw line or just score in general. But you need DJ Horn to play well in this game. You need McConnell to play well in this game. You're not a deep team. You need your bench to provide something. And so I don't know that they can do it. So I'm going to take Purdue just because I think the depth is a factor and a benefit for the Boilermakers. And then obviously the ED factor is literally and physically too big to overlook.
Yeah. And at a certain point too, like, maybe they just say like, DJ Burns might be our most important offensive player. Let's make Purdue's guards beat us. Like, maybe they have as poor a shooting game against us as they did against Tennessee. Like, throw a 2-3 at them. Just, we are not letting Zach Edey touch the ball every single possession. Or if he is going to be surrounded. And, you know, that will probably result in fouls, because just that is unfortunately the way that college basketball officials officiate Edie. But you got to try something different, because it seems like, you know, DJ Burns might not be long for this game if they just try to play things straight up.
I'm intrigued to see how Purdue defends him. I imagine they're not going to have Edie cover him, but
yeah,
then again, I don't know.
Yeah, I think I don't know. I think you attack him. If it isn't a one-on-one situation, DJ Burns is quicker. So that plays in your advantage. Or you do what Gonzaga started to do before they went away from it, just attack Edie and ball screens. Like, whoever Edie is guarding, just have him come up, set a screen at the top of the key for DJ Horn, let him shoot free throw line jumpers all day, because Edie cannot play anything except for drop coverage because he is just too slow. But there's been a dearth of good guards in college basketball this year. So it's not everyone can fully accomplish that, unfortunately. But it's a tall hill to climb for NC State, but every game except Oakland, they've been an underdog, picked against them. They keep winning, so who knows? But and it's looking like Purdue in that one. And then late game, also heavy underdog Alabama taking on UConn. Alabama's going to have to hit 16 to 23s to keep this one close. I don't think they do, because UConn has been defending at such a high level. Illinois is a similarly talented offensive team to Alabama, and they were shut down pretty handily. I mean, they're right next to each other in the KenPom rankings, and Illinois obviously took a dip after that game. So there's not really anything I'm seeing here that shows me Alabama is going to have much of a chance. So boring, but going to go UConn. What about you?
Same. I mean, I picked UConn before the tournament. I've been banging the drum that UConn is the best team in the country for quite a while now. Alabama, like you said, got to get Sears going and then got to find a way to slow down Klingon, because, like I mentioned previously, the game against Clemson is probably one of the few that Alabama will have an interior advantage. They certainly do not in this game. And if he does anything like he did against Illinois, then I think it's going to be a long night for Nate Oates' team.
Like Alabama, I know they already played Purdue, but you can five out Purdue. You can't really five out UConn and have the same level of success. So, I mean, it seems like it's setting up for Edie versus Klingon, and I think that's the matchup everyone wants to see. It's one I'm certainly interested in seeing, especially if we can get similar officials to what we got in the UConn-Illinois game, where Klingon was playing outstanding defense. They were not calling fouls on him since he was doing that. And I think he's a guy who is big enough and talented enough to defend Edie without fouling, which is hard to come by in the present day of college basketball. But yeah, that's I think that takes away a lot of what Purdue wants to do, because he has been the bulk of their scoring. He is on an otherworldly tear, all-time college basketball tournament scoring run, as evidenced by dropping 40 on a good defensive Tennessee team. I've got to go UConn there. I need UConn to end this, because I don't think NC State will. But until somebody can give UConn a game, like taking Purdue out of the equation, I got to keep picking them. So that's my justification. Picked it before the tournament, sticking with them now. I still like UConn to go back to back here.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing we've talked about for so long is that Edie is such a difference maker for Purdue. He is, I won't say negated, but it is a significantly different game when you have a guy that's 7'2", faster, and athletic that will be on the opposite side. I mean, you're burying the lead, though, with the matchup that America is waiting for. It's Lawyer versus Spencer that everyone cares about in this game. You know, two of the biggest stars in the sport going at it and biggest personalities. But like Purdue's biggest weakness is its guard play. We've talked about that for so long. UConn's guards are better across the board, and I don't think it's even particularly close. when you look at Castle, Newton, and Spencer versus whichever three it ends up being, Lawyer, Smith, and I insert whoever you want, Lance Jones or Mason Gillis, like that's heavy, heavy favorite for UConn. And then you throw Caravan in there because he's such a difference maker on the offensive end. It just feels like it's going to be way too much for this Purdue team to handle. But if they can get Klingon in foul trouble early, that could allow some openings, and all they have to do is hit a few shots to make it a little more difficult for UConn to guard them. That said, I think UConn wins.
Yeah, Purdue is shooting the ball better than they were last year. Lance Jones certainly has helped with that. But again, like, they're not a better shooting team than Alabama. I realize Zach Edey is different than anyone Alabama has on the inside, but Donovan Klingon exists. He's like, Donovan Klingon is what Zach Edey wants to be as an NBA prospect. And that's just reality. Donovan Klingon is going to be better at the next level. If any NBA GM even thinks for a second of drafting Edey over Klingon, that is malpractice and they should not have that job. But yeah, it's going to be, because Lawyer was the one who had the egregious flop against Tennessee, right?
Yeah.
But yeah. So, I mean, unironically, him against Cam Spencer in the just shitheel battle could be one that is interesting to watch, because they've both, I wouldn't necessarily have pegged Lawyer for that, but he has shown us who he is. Cam Spencer has made no attempt at hiding who he is. So yeah, that would be the secondary matchup. And there's not really a fake tough guy on UConn to counterbalance whatever Mason Gillis is going through at any particular time. But you know, so we're robbed of that matchup. If they could pick up Coleman Hawkins for a game, then maybe we could put those two in a corner together. But the bright light. It's I don't know. Somebody's gonna stop the Purdue train. I'd love for it to be NC State for the story, but I think it's gonna be UConn, because nobody's been able to stop UConn outside of your Seton Hall Pirates. So that's where I'm going there. That's how I see this ending up.
We'll give the Jays fans a little life too. They did win as well.
They did. But how quickly we forget, or I forget, I guess.
The shelf life too. And I don't know, you're not as connected or plugged into Big East Twitter, but the shelf life that St. John's fans are getting from dropping 90 points in a loss against
UConn, that's crazy.
Is remarkable.
I did see that. And like that in and of itself proves how unserious of a program you are. It's like, hey, we lost this game, let us in.
I get some of the writers' engagement farming, but like, bro, it's not even close. Like, this is not at all like that. That's so not how this works. And it's not how it should work either. How about let's point to the team that actually did beat them and then say, you know what? UConn is pretty good. Let's not discount a win against them for any reason whatsoever. They are clearly one of the two best teams in the country. And hopefully in the next week, we will know exactly where they stand. But yeah, hey, shout out St. John, scored 90 against UConn once.
I get that to an extent, because like, no escalators, everyone's preeminence favorite or least favorite UConn Twitter accounts, not exclusively, but a lot of what he does is just throw out the most bad faith arguments. I don't know if that's proper grammar, but not exclusively, but he does that a lot. I understand St. John's fans, if they know what they're doing, if they truly believe what they're saying, then I can't help you. But yeah, that I did see a lot of that after the Illinois game. It's like, hey, don't forget about us, St. John's.
It's hard to tell what they're doing, because they are also back talking about Final Fours with Rick Pitino. And it's like, okay, you didn't even make the NCAA tournament. You struggled to finish fifth in the Big East. Like, let's pump the brakes.
You got worked by Michigan. That's all I'm going to say. That's all I'm going to continue to say. But again, they succeed in forcing me to take my eye off the ball time and again. The main story is UConn, very good. That's something that we have to look forward to in the Final Four. Two heavy underdogs on Saturday. Maybe somebody will surprise us, but either way, if we get UConn, Purdue in the final, I think everyone's satisfied with that story too. So
yeah,
plenty to look forward to. We will be back next week to talk about whoever the champion is. I think it'll be UConn, but I have been wrong plenty in this tournament already. So either way, tune in. We'll talk about it. We'll see you next time.